This morning's lesson is entitled Beating Bitterness, a case study from the life of Joseph is our subtitle. There are things that we are often required to do in our service to the Lord, which are the exact opposite of what we feel like doing, and actually run even contrary to maybe our feelings. And as a result of that, it is, I think, at those times in which we really learn, are we obedient to the Lord because we agree with Him, or are we obedient to the Lord because He is our Lord? And that's when we really begin to see, is my faith really my faith in guiding me? Or is it at those times in which I abandon my faith and maybe find out that really my walk with the Lord has never really been a walk with the Lord? We've just been going together in the same place because we've both been heading in the same direction. But the moment that our Lord takes a different path that I don't think I like, that's when we find, are we really walking with the Lord, or have we just been walking beside the Lord? And those are two different things. I want to begin this morning, as we think about this matter of bitterness, I think it's important that we make sure we understand what it means to be bitter. A couple of the lexicons that I looked at, Lo and Nita probably gave the best definition, and it is a state of sharp, intense resentment or hate. The verb form of that particular word is found in Colossians chapter 3 and verse 19, wherein husbands are told to love your wives and do not be embittered toward them. That's the verb form of that. We're told that they are to not resent or not have any sort of a hatred toward them. The noun form, and I just realized I forgot to put that on the slide, but the noun form of this word is found in Ephesians 4 and verse 31. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and slander be put away from you, along with all malice. To have bitter resentment or hatred towards someone else. Now that would seem to be, at the very outset, the very opposite attitude that any child of God would ever have. But if you have suffered at the hands of another, if you've been hurt by another, if someone has done something that has wounded you, then you understand bitterness. You understand the battle of not resenting the person, having a bitter hatred toward that person. Commentaries give some help, and in the Word Biblical commentary that I have in my office, Andrew Lincoln said that this word indicates the hard-heartedness that harbors resentment about the past. William Barclay does a great job often in giving a word, a definition, and then kind of fleshing it out to where we can really kind of grab a hold on it. And he said, the Greeks defined this word as long-standing resentment, as the spirit which refuses to be reconciled. So many of us have a way of nursing our wrath to keep it warm, of brooding over the insults and the injuries and the slights which we have received. There may be at times the initial surge of resentment, the initial surge of bitterness, even the initial surge of hatred as a result of what's been done. But at some point in time, this word bitterness comes into play, wherein the idea is it's not the initial surge, it's the long-held hanging on, keeping it warm, keeping it stirred up, constantly staying in an attitude of resentment and hatred toward another individual. I want to suggest to you this morning that one of the fantastic lessons in the life of Joseph is this very thing. I tell you what, when I look at the life of Joseph, there are times that I'm just left scratching my head as to, I know that's what you're supposed to do. I know that's how you're supposed to feel. And I know that's right. But I'm not sure how he did that. I'm not sure how he managed to do that. And so I want to look at that this morning and see if we can figure something out. But I want to do something a little bit different. Even before we get into Joseph, I want to look at a case of some individuals who were beaten by bitterness. I want to look at Joseph's brothers. Because when you think about what Joseph's brothers did, Joseph's brothers had bitterness toward their brother Joseph. And it was this bitterness that gave them the motivation to do what they did. It was this bitterness because of their resentment toward their brother, because their brother had the wonderful life of being with his father. And it's really interesting when I thought about studying this, there's such a contradiction between how Joseph was in his life, being the youngest and being favored. Think about how Joseph's life was, and then think about David's life. David was also the youngest. And yet when the man of God comes to Elijah, comes to anoint the next king, where is David? He's not even brought in from the field. He's the youngest. What rights did he have? And so you see, from a comparison of these two individuals, you see just how favored Joseph was, just how high of a pedestal he was put on. And so here is his brothers looking at this, and they're saying, you know, he's the youngest. He shouldn't have any rights. We're older than him. We should have all the rights. He should get the leftovers. He should get anything that, if there's anything left over after everything else is done, he should then get it, just like it was in the household of David. All the sons were brought in, and Elijah says, is this it? And Jesse says, well, yeah, there's David, but he's the youngest, and he's out in the field where he's supposed to be. That wasn't the way it was in the house of Jacob. And his brothers didn't miss that. They noticed how that Joseph was favored. They noticed that Joseph was loved more. He was loved more than all of the other brothers. He was loved more than them, and they resented that about him. And then the dreams of glory that Joseph has, that he shares with his brothers, they resent him even more. Go to Genesis chapter 37. Now Jacob lived in the land where his father had sojourned, in the land of Canaan. These are the records of the generations, of Jacob. Joseph, when 17 years of age, was pasturing the flock with his brothers while he was still a youth, along with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah and his father's wives. And Joseph brought back a bad report about them to their father. And Joseph loved, or Israel loved Joseph more than all of his sons, because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a very colored tunic. His brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, and so they hated him. They were bitter toward him. They resented him. How come he gets all the special privileges and we get nothing? And they could not speak to him on friendly terms. Joseph has the dreams that we're told about in verses 5, and he tells the brothers his dreams, and we get to the end of verse 8, and they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. And he had another dream, and his father rebukes him for this, but his brothers hated him for this. I want to suggest to you, brethren, that their actions against him were motivated by this bitterness. When they decide that they're going to sell their brother, and then what's going to happen to all their dreams, all of that was done because of their hatred, resentment, and bitterness toward Joseph. Because they saw what he was getting that they weren't getting, and so they were bitter about that. They were resentful of that, hateful of that. And so when they decided upon this plan to, number one, kill him, and then finally they decided, no, we'll just sell him. All of this were actions that were motivated by their bitterness and resentment and hatred of him. But it's interesting that at some point they came to believe that a day of reckoning would one day come upon them. How did they feel about their actions after? How did they feel about their actions after they had sold their brother? Well, you know, we're not told that immediately because they sell their brother. And then where does the story go? The story follows Joseph and what happens with Joseph. And so we're not told immediately the impact of the brothers until the brothers come back into the story of Joseph. Until they come back into the life of Joseph. And then we're given a clue. But I want you to notice that they come back into the life of Joseph 22 years after they've sold him. Been over 20 years since these things have happened. Now I want you to listen to the statements of these brothers. They come back to buy grain in Egypt in chapter 42 and verses 21 and 22. They said to one another when Joseph had accused them of being spies, they said to one another, truly we are guilty concerning our brother. Because we saw the distress of his soul when he pleaded with us, yet we would not listen. Therefore, this distress has come upon us. Reuben answered, saying, did I not tell you, do not sin against the boy? You would not listen. Now comes the reckoning for his blood. You know how they had lived the 22 years of their life? After they sold their brother, when they acted in a way from the motivation of resentment and hatred and bitterness, you know how they lived the rest of their life? Just waiting for the shoe to drop. Just waiting for the day of reckoning to come. They lived in fear. One day we're going to get our just desserts. One day this is going to come back upon us. And the very first time, 22 years later, they have difficulty. Their mind immediately goes where? To the very thing they've been worried about their entire life. And Reuben is the one that says, I told you. I told you there'd be a day of reckoning for what we did. In Genesis 43, verses 18 and 19. Now the men were afraid because they were brought to Joseph's house, and they said, It is because of the money that was returned in our sacks the first time that we were being brought in, that he might seek an occasion against us and fall upon us and take us for slaves with our donkeys. We're going to get what we gave to our brother. We're going to become slaves. We know that's what happened. This is what's going to take place. Chapter 45 and verse 3. Then Joseph said to his brother, I am Joseph, his father. Is my father still alive? But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed at his presence. As if the situation wasn't bad enough that they have a foreign leader accusing them of being spies, now they find out the foreign leader is their brother that they sold. I mean, how much worse can this thing get? I mean, it's bad enough that they're being accused of being spies by a foreign dictator, and now the one that's accusing them of this and holds the power of their lives in his hand is their brother that they sold 22. Oh yeah, this is definitely the day of reckoning. It had to be in the minds of these brothers. Oh man, we are so toast. In chapter 50, in verse 15, when Jacob has now died and his brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, what if Joseph bears a grudge against us and pays us back in full for the wrong which we did to him? I know we look at these brothers and we say, well, you know, they got what was coming to them. But I want you to think about living your life just waiting for the day of reckoning to come. Just knowing that the actions that you took out of resentment and hatred and bitterness, knowing that one day I'm going to pay for those. One day I'm going to suffer the consequences for that. And for 22 years they waited for the next shoe to drop. They waited for the day of reckoning to come. Let me suggest something to you. I think this is a good lesson. I think when we begin to think about the actions that we're going to take, albeit justifiable, we think, in our mind, from motivation of resentment and hatred, just be aware of the fact that the consequence of actions taken out of bitterness will often be more difficult to bear than the reason for the original bitterness. Would life not have been better for them just to have put up with their brother, just to have put up with Joseph, just to have put up with his dreams, just to have put up with the favoritism that he had? Wouldn't life have been better for them? Instead, by virtue of their actions motivated by resentment, they lived the rest of their lives in constant fear, one day this is going to come back on us. One day there's going to be a day of reckoning. One day we're going to have to pay for this. In the first moment that they have a little difficulty, where does their mind go? This is it. This is it. Now I say that to say, you know, in situations wherein there has been hurt, and in situations wherein one may be fighting resentment and hatred and bitterness, the actions that you take from that motivation may be more difficult to bear than just bearing the original slight. Because I cannot imagine their lives, the lives of these brothers, as they bore that guilt all their life, doing what they did from the motivation of resentment. But Joseph is the one that we want to look at as the opposite side of this case, as the individual who had every right to the moment, at the moment that he saw his brothers, to say, the shoe's on the other foot today, boys. Boy, has the day of reckoning come for you. And yet Joseph isn't that way at all. When we think about the life of Joseph, what would have happened if Joseph had been bitter about his circumstances? Suppose that Joseph didn't do what he did, choices he made. Let's suppose that he was bitter. What would that have looked like? You know, I have questions about whether he would have been successful in Potiphar's house, whether he would have been successful in prison, and I doubt that he would have probably ever gone to the last two if he hadn't been successful in Potiphar's house. Would he have ever gone to prison? Would he have ever been in a position that he was in? Would he have ever had the opportunity to stand before Pharaoh? If he'd have chosen a course of bitterness, he would not have been where God wanted him to be. That would have given him the ability to have the blessing that he would have in the latter part of his life. He might have felt justified in embezzling from Potiphar. You know, I'm not even supposed to be here. In fact, he says, I was stolen. I was kidnapped, too, the versions say, when he's talking to the butler. I was stolen from my land. I was kidnapped from my land. I'm not even supposed to be here. And so since life has dealt me a difficult blow, since life has been hard to me, well, I'm just going to get all that I can get. That's the way life's going to be. And so he might have felt justified in embezzling from Potiphar instead of being the faithful servant that he was. And sleeping with Potiphar's wife, well, you know what? Life hasn't been kind to me. I might as well get what I can get. He might have been justified in sulking in his prison cell. You know, things were looking better for me. Things were looking up a little bit. And then lo and behold, I'm accused and I'm put into prison. What's the use? And so he'd have been fine. If he'd have been bitter and resenting his situation, well, we would have found him sulking in the prison cell, wouldn't we? And if for some reason God would have managed to work it out to where, in spite of Joseph's bitterness and resentment and hatred, he would have found himself somehow as ruler of Egypt, don't you imagine that the brothers would never have left Egypt again the first time they came? Now, I recognize I'm asking you to imagine what would have happened, but you know that that's not far beyond the realm of possibility, what I'm stating to you. That if Joseph would have been that bitter, he would have done exactly the opposite of what we find him doing. The problem with that You know what he would have ended up and done? He would have thwarted God's plan. Now, Joseph understands this later. I don't know at what point, and there's a lot about the life of Joseph that along the way as he's suffering these difficulties, I can't completely explain to you what he was doing or what his mindset was. I can't completely tell you that. In fact, that's why in just a minute when we give you these three things, I'm going to suggest to you that it seems that this may be what he was thinking. I can't say for sure. But I know one thing, had he not done what he should have done and acted as he should have done, he would have thwarted God's plan for Israel to become a nation in Egypt. And he understands this on the tail end of this, on the other end of this whole scenario. Because he says to his brothers in chapter 45 and verse 5, "Do not be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here." Now he hasn't forgot about how he got there. He understands they're responsible for that. "For God sent me before you to preserve life." Verse 7. "God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant in the earth and to keep you alive by a great deliverance." This was God's plan. And God could use Joseph because he knew he was a man that would not be bitter and resentful and hatred. But if he was a man that was bitter and resentful and hatred, God would have used someone else. And Joseph would not have been part of God's plan. I don't really believe that Joseph could have thwarted the plan of God. God would have found someone else. God would have worked it another way. But God knew that he could depend upon Joseph to do what Joseph was supposed to do. And so because Joseph did what he was supposed to do, he enabled the plan of God. He didn't thwart the plan of God. In other words, Joseph would have done something stupid. Yes, that is on the slide. I remember when I was in Claremore, Oklahoma, preaching, and I remember one time I made the comment, "stupid," and I heard this gasp, and I didn't really know what it was until later one of the members came up and said, "You about gave my kid a heart attack because we're not allowed to say stupid in our house." So I'm sorry if you're not allowed to say stupid in your house. But that's what would have happened to Joseph. Had he been bitter, had he been resentful, had he been full of hatred, he would have done something stupid. I like what Max Lucado said in his book, "You Can Get Through This," where he uses the life of Joseph. And he talks about how that Joseph was able to overcome despair and bitterness. And he said, "You don't fix a struggling marriage with an affair, a drug problem with more drugs, debt with more debt. You don't fix stupid with stupid. You don't get out of a mess by making another one. Do what pleases God. You will never go wrong doing what is right." We have a statement that, you know, when most people are in a hole, they stop digging. When you're in a hole, stop making it deeper. Stop making it more difficult. I'm not saying that it's easy. I'm not saying that it's hard to, or I'm not saying that it's easy to do that. It's hard. It's difficult. It's going to run against the grain of what you naturally want to do. But remember, the natural man works against the spiritual man. And so I've got to do what God would have me to do. Actions taken from bitterness will certainly please me. Boy, I feel good about it. Don't you think those brothers felt good about selling their brother? Aha! We got rid of that dreamer. But it seems as though that feeling dissipated really quickly. And it seems as though that moment in which they realized that, yeah, we got rid of our brother, maybe it was when they saw the impact that it had upon their father. And day after day after day, they saw that impact. I don't know at what point in their life that it really came crashing down upon them. Oh my word, what have we done? And from that moment on, they waited for the next shoe to drop. I don't know at what point. But I'm telling you, it came because we know at the end of their life when they come to Egypt, they're fearful of that. And so it may be that what you do from the attitude of bitterness, boy, that feels good. Brother, it feels good now, but it's not going to feel so good later. And you're going to have to deal with the consequences of having done that. Besides the fact of doing the wrong thing, now the consequences of having done the wrong thing and suffering as a result of that. Genesis 39 and verse 9. Why was it that Joseph could say to Potiphar's wife, "There is no one greater in this house than I, and he has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do this great evil and sin against God?" That wasn't just what guided Joseph's life in this situation. That's what guided Joseph's life. I can't do this because this would be a sin against God. In 1 Peter chapter 2, just real quick, we'll turn over there and look at our Lord. In 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 23, Peter says, "And while being reviled, he did not revile in return. While suffering, he uttered no threats, but kept entrusting himself to him who judges righteously." Did Jesus not feel the reviling? Did Jesus not feel the suffering? Did Jesus not hear the threats? Yes. But where did he put his trust? In him who judges righteously. He did the very same thing that Joseph did in his life. Did Joseph have a reason to be bitter? Absolutely, Joseph had reasons to be bitter. His father's favoritism. He was sold by his brothers. He was falsely accused of rape. He was even forgotten by the butler. You know, it must have felt at some point in Joseph's life, it must have felt that Joseph, you know, I take one step forward and two steps back. My father has set me up in a position to where I'm going to be hated by my brothers. There's nothing I can do about it. I'm going to be hated by virtue of how he's treating me and how he's treating them. And so he could have been bitter at his father. He was bitter at his brothers. "Hey, it's not my fault. Don't get mad at me. This is Dad doing. Don't be bitter and resentful and hateful of me. I can't help what Dad's doing. I can't help that my mother was his beloved wife. I can't help that." And so he could have been bitter at his brothers, for in spite of the fact that he was birthed into this, if you will, they were still. And so when he gets to Potiphar and he's sold into slavery, it's like, hey, well, at least life is kind of taking a turn, one step forward, and then he's falsely accused and thrown into prison and two steps back. Wow, man. And then finally a glimmer of hope when he, through the inspiration of God, he tells the interpretation of the dreams of the butler and says, "Now remember me." And so Joseph gathers his luggage ready when the butler returns to Pharaoh and tells Pharaoh, the man that interpreted the dreams, and he's ready to go. And a day passes. Well, you know, Pharaoh's a busy man. Another day passes. Well, maybe Pharaoh was out on some military campaign. And a month passes. And a month passes. Yep, that's what I figured. Just like everything else in my life. One step forward, two steps back. Nothing good's going to happen. He could have been bitter about that. I want you to consider something. There may be valid reasons for bitterness, but it still does not excuse one for possessing it. You know, the fact that you have the right to be bitter says that there is something for you to be bitter about. So I'm not slighting that. I'm not saying that's not the case. There is something for you. There was certainly something for Joseph to be bitter about. Absolutely so. And yet, he was not. So the question then is, what kept Joseph from being bitter? Well, let me give you some things that we have to consider in trying to look at this and figure this out. The text does not specifically tell us what Joseph did. The text doesn't say, and Joseph thought this, or Joseph did this, or Joseph followed this five simple plan for coping. We're not given those kind of indicators. But I would suggest to you that there is some circumstantial evidence which provides us with clues that I think help. Couple this evidence with known facts on how one can overcome bitterness, And I can suggest to you some pretty good ideas about how Joseph did it. The first thing that I would suggest to you is it certainly seems as though Joseph knew he was destined for something better. Remember, God gave him these dreams of glory, these dreams of ruling his family. God gave them to him early, early in life. Gave them to him when he was but 17 years old. In Genesis chapter 37 and verses 5 through 11. And these dreams did not leave the mind of Joseph. These dreams that he had years and years and years ago were still in his mind years and years and years later. Because in Genesis chapter 42 and verse 9, when the brothers come to buy grain and Joseph sees these are his brothers. Pick up reading in verse 9. Joseph remembered the dream. Joseph remembered the dreams which he had about them and then carries on a conversation with them. Now, I suppose the seeing of his brother could have jogged his memory. I suppose that's the case. But I wonder if Joseph kept those dreams in his mind all along. All along, this was a foreshadowing of what was going to happen in his life. And so all along, Joseph knew, you know what, I know what life is like right now, but I know God's told me, God showed me, something better is coming. Could this be why God sent him the dreams in the first place? Why did God send him these dreams at this point? Why did God send him the dreams when he was 17 years old? Could it be because Joseph needed to know, Joseph, don't look at your circumstances. Don't look at what's going and swirling all around you in your life. Look at where I have envisioned you to be. Look at what I'm planning for you. That's what you need to look at. Was that what helped Joseph? Is this what allowed Joseph to look past the injustices that he suffered, knowing that something better was coming? I'm not going to focus on these things. I know that this is going to be temporary. I know that this is going to be fleeting. And so I know that God has revealed to me that here's what holds out for me. Here's what's going to happen to me. Is that why those dreams were so fresh? I can't say that for sure. And that's why I have on there. It seems he knew he was destined. It is interesting that God gave him these dreams very early before any of these things happened so that he could hang on to that when these difficult things started to take place. If this is the case, then you know what we find Joseph doing? We find Joseph focusing on his destiny and not his difficulty. Now, it wasn't that there wasn't difficulty to focus on. It wasn't like life was easy for the first maybe couple of years that he was a slave in Potiphar's house. It wasn't like prison was a veritable paradise for that time. There were difficulties involved. But Joseph always seems to somehow, in spite of the difficulties, rise above them. How do you do that? And the only thing that I can think of is Joseph knew this is not going to define me. This perspective, brethren, will help in our bitterness. Isn't this the very thing that God calls us, the very outlook that God calls us to have in 2 Corinthians 4. Therefore we do not lose heart, but though our outer man is decaying, yet our inner man is being renewed day by day. For momentary light affliction is producing for us an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison. Now, it may not be an exact parallel. It may be that the affliction that's being talked about here is an affliction because of our faith, persecution because of our belief in God. Okay, that's fine. But the parallel is, how do I handle difficulty? How do I handle affliction? How can I get past the difficulty of the moment, I look past the moment. I look beyond the moment. And this is what Paul says. I look at the eternal weight of glory. Most difficulties are momentary and temporary. Yeah, but I've been struggling with this for 15 years. Fine, compare that to eternity. It's momentary. Yeah, but you don't know. I've had this for 50 years. Fine, compare that to eternity. It's temporary. Now, I recognize that that's easy for us to say because we are creatures who are bound by time, and that it may be the majority of our life here on this earth may be in the midst of difficulty. But I'm telling you, in comparison to eternity, it is temporary. And it is short. And so if I just look at the difficulty and I allow that to define me, then I'm going to find myself missing out on the ultimate destiny. Maybe my mate has been unfaithful. Maybe I've been fired for something I didn't do. Maybe brethren haven't been kind to me or considerate of me, forgiving of me. You know what? I choose not to be defined by that difficulty. I'm going to look past that. I'm not saying that it's easy, but I'm going to determine that. I'm going to look past that because I'm not going to be defined by that difficulty. I see that in the life of Joseph. There's something else that I want to suggest to you that may be a possibility in reference to Joseph, and that is it seems he focused on what he could control. Joseph could not control the favoritism of his father. He couldn't control that. He couldn't control the hatred of his brothers. He couldn't control the longing and the lying of Potiphar's wife. He couldn't help the memory of the butler. He couldn't control any of those things. All those things were out of his control. Now, he could focus on those things, and he could make his decisions on the basis of those things, but he couldn't control any of those things. What he could control was how he would react to those things. That was in his control. Is this why God could be with him and help him be successful regardless of the situation? Is this why God could work with Joseph and make him be successful? Because Joseph was going to say, I'm going to control what I can control. I'm going to not look at what I can't do anything about. I'm going to control me, and God was able to use him. And so in Potiphar's house, what do we find? We are told, verses 2 through 4, God was with him and all of Potiphar's house benefited as a result of that. What are we told about in prison? The prisoner, the man in charge of all the prison, recognized that God was with him and so put him in charge of all the things. Could God have been able to be with him? Could God have been able to use Joseph had Joseph maintained an attitude of bitterness? Couldn't have used him. But because Joseph was focused on what Joseph needed to be focused on, it allowed God to be able to use him. Now, it wasn't like that Joseph forgot the injustices that he had suffered. Oh, no, he remembered what had happened to him. Genesis chapter, go back to the book of Genesis chapter 40 and verse 7. I'm not suggesting that somehow we take a pill that gives us, you know, short-term memory loss and that we just absolutely forget it. No, Joseph remembered. The things that he had suffered. He remembered this. And yet, he didn't allow that to define him. Look in verse 15. For I was in fact kidnapped, some versions say stolen, from the land of the Hebrews. And even here I have done nothing that should have put me into the dungeon. I have been stolen. That shouldn't have happened to me. I've been falsely accused. That shouldn't have happened to me. I am here because of things that have happened into my life that should not have happened to me. These things shouldn't have taken place in my life. And yet they have. And so what was his attitude? Well, I like verse 7. His attitude was that he actually noticed that the faces of the officials of Pharaoh were sad. Do you notice that if you're absorbed in yourself? Do you notice that if you're throwing yourself a pity party? Well, woe is me. You know, that shouldn't have been, they shouldn't have done that. That shouldn't have happened. I don't understand. You wouldn't have noticed them. You wouldn't have noticed the sadness on their faces. And what that tells me is that Joseph was not being defined by the difficulty. Joseph was controlling what he could control. These things that have taken place in my life were out of my control. But he could control how he would treat others. And so when he saw these men with sad faces, he actually noticed that. A fellow that's self-absorbed, feeling sorry for himself, full of hatred and bitterness and resentment, nope, he doesn't notice those kind of things. Because he just can't see past the difficulties that he's suffering. The last thing I want to look at. I cannot control how others will treat or mistreat me. Forgot I wanted to make an application real quick. When I'm mistreated, I cannot control how others should act or the attitudes that others should possess. You know, if Jesus couldn't do that, then I'm pretty sure I'm not going to be able to do that. In 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 22 through 23, who committed no sin, nor was any deceit found in his mouth. Okay, so what we're about to read happened in verse 23 to him. He was undeserving from what we read in verse 22. So he hadn't done anything that was deserving of being reviled. He hadn't done anything that was worthy of suffering. He hadn't done anything that was worthy of the things that happened to him. He was had no deceit in his mouth. He was innocent of all sin. And yet in spite of making the right choices, these things happened to him. He couldn't help how others treated him. If I choose to focus on what others are doing or shouldn't be doing, let me give you a guarantee. You will always, always be disappointed. Now, I'm not saying that you're around a bunch of lowlifes. That's not the point that I'm making. The point that I'm making is that if you think that individuals, humans, won't make mistakes, you're forgetting Romans 3 and verse 23. We all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. We all make mistakes. And I may be the beneficiary of your mistake. I can guarantee you that if I'm going to focus on what others are doing or shouldn't be doing, at some point in time, I'll find myself being disappointed. People will let me down. I let myself down. So why should I expect any more from you? The point is, if I choose to go this way, I've chosen a path that I know will be a path of bitterness and disappointment. You know, there we go. What kept Joseph from becoming bitter? The last thing I want to look at. Well, three quick things. And that is, he stayed faithful to God. In Genesis chapter 39 and verse 9, we're back in the story of Potiphar's wife. And Joseph lists in verse 9, there is no one greater in this house than I, and he has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. But I want you to notice that he says, and we've pointed this out many times, how then could I do this great evil and sin against God? How do you explain the shift? Let me give you a suggestion. Could it be that Joseph saw Potiphar's attitude toward him as a blessing from God? Could it be that as he looked at what Potiphar had done for him, how Potiphar had blessed him, how Potiphar had given them, could it be that Joseph is looking at that and saying, you know what? God has blessed me with having an attitude, having a master who has an attitude toward me that he would put me in this position. Joseph looked at this situation and said, yes, I know what Potiphar has done for me. I know how Potiphar has elevated me. But Joseph says, you know, as I look at this situation, I really don't see Potiphar behind this. I see God behind this. I see God blessing me with a master who gave me the ability, who saw in me the fact that I was a righteous man and elevated me. You know what I see in this? He says, I see the blessings of God in this. Now, how could I sin against one who has given me the blessings like this? That seems to be the point in my mind. How then could he sin against God who had blessed him so? The second thing on this slide, he was thankful to God. You know how long it took for Joseph to work through this? 13 years. 13 years of difficulty. 13 years of up and down and up and down and up and down. One step forward, two steps back. One step forward, two steps back. 13 years. Now, did he look back upon that and say, God, you know, you could have worked that a little bit quicker. You could have been a little bit speedier in the process of getting me to where you wanted me to be as you gave me the dreams. You could have got there a little bit faster, Lord. But no, that wasn't the attitude that we have him taking. Because when in chapter 41, in verses 51 and 52, when he names his sons, listen to what he names them. God has made me forget all my trouble and all my father's household. Manasseh. God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction, Ephraim. Now, it took 13 years, but he was thankful. It may be that you're in the middle of year 6. Maybe in the middle of year 10 for God's 13-year plan for you. My encouragement would be, do what Joseph did, and that is stay faithful. Because Joseph knew God had not abandoned him. In Genesis 39 and verse 10, as she spoke to Joseph day after day, he did not listen to her to lie beside her at all. He refused to do that. Chapter 40 and verse 10. Verse 8, sorry. Then they said to him, we have had a dream. There was no one to interpret it. Then Joseph said to them, do not interpretations belong to God? So you're, you know, barking up the wrong tree. No, what does Joseph say? Tell me. Now why would, if he just said interpretations belong to God, why would he say tell me if he knew that God hadn't abandoned him? He was in a relationship with the Lord. He knew God hadn't abandoned him. He tells Pharaoh the same thing when Pharaoh says, you've had a dream. You know, one of the things that sometimes we ask in reference to difficulties and trials is, well, where was God? Where was God when this took place? Where was God when this happened? Well, I'll tell you where God was. He was right there. The passage that I had Brandon read for you in Psalm 139. Where can I go from your spirit, or where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, behold, you are there. If I take the wings of the dawn, if I dwell in the remotest part of the sea, even there your hand will lead me, your right hand will lay hold of me. When Joseph was in Potiphar's house, being tempted by Potiphar's wife, God was there. How can I do this thing against God, he says. When Joseph was in prison, God was there. When the baker and the butler showed up with dreams, when he was brought before Pharaoh, God was there. Where was God during all this time in Joseph's life? Right there, all along, the whole time. Joseph understood that. Joseph knew that God hadn't abandoned him. He is not far from each one of us. Beating bitterness, brethren, is not an easy thing. And it's something that, as we look through the life of Joseph, we can get some glimpses as to how he might have handled it, some glimpses as to how he might have worked his way through this process. I would suggest to you, though, it is a process. And maybe, in reference to where God would have you to be, and the place where Joseph finally finds himself, actually in a good place in his life, if you will, it may take 13 years. Maybe you're on God's 13-year plan. Maybe you're on God's 3-year plan. I would pray that for you, that you're on the 3-year plan or the 1-year plan or the 2-month plan. Some of us would like to be on the 32nd plan, but that doesn't always work that way. But what I can tell you is that if we stay faithful to God, God will be able to use us, and if we'll stay faithful to God, and every choice and every decision I make, I don't care what everybody else is doing, every choice and every decision that I make, if I say, will this please God? Then in spite of what others may do that I can't control, in spite of the poor choices that others make that I have no say over, if I can just control me, then it may be that I may live my entire life in difficulty. But I have not shortchanged my destiny. I have not lost my eternal reward. But if I allow myself to be bitter and resentful and hatred and maintain that attitude, at some point in time, the reward will begin to slip away. And it won't be as important. And I'll be able to justify my bitterness more and more, and the reward will seem less and less important. And so I have to be able to study the life of Joseph, and I have to try to just look for nuggets and pearls and just glimpses of evidence that says, well, how did Joseph do it? And hang upon those. And knowing that God hasn't gone anywhere, still there. And it may be at those times that I need to desperately plead for him and not worry about what others have done. I can't control that. They'll stand before their maker for that. I know that if I control myself, I'll stand before my maker knowing that I've done what I should have done. I appreciate your attention this morning. We went a few minutes over. I would suggest that you take your songbooks out and turn it to the number that's been selected. Really, the lesson could be summed up in this song. Trust and obey. You know, those just roll off the tongue, don't they? They don't roll in the life so well sometimes, but they certainly do roll off the tongue. I don't know. Our trust will be challenged. Our obedience will be attacked. But if we walk with the Lord in the light of His Word, what a glory He sheds on our way. And while we do His good will, He abides with us still and with all who will trust and obey. Not a burden we bear, not a sorrow we share, but our toil He doth richly repay, not a grief or a loss, not a frown or a cross, but is blessed if we trust and obey. But we never can prove the delights of His love until all on the altar we lay. For the favor He shows and the joy He bestows are for those who will trust and obey. Then in fellowship sweet, we'll sit at His feet, or we'll walk by His side in the way. What He says, we will do. Where He sends, we will go. Never fear, only trust and obey. Trust and obey, for there's no other way to be happy in Jesus but to trust and obey. Won't you come while together we stand and sing our song?